Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
Fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had a cheat.
Well, he overheated up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.
Hello and welcome to this week's Football Family, the 42's dedicated football podcast. I am your host, David Snaid, and joining me today, as ever, our Sunday paper reviewers extraordinaire, Messrs. Cooney and Keegan. There's Premier League, Champions League, Women's Euro 2025 qualifiers, and League of Ireland all on the agenda for today's pod. But as per his contract on this week of weeks, we must indulge Gav with a little bit of Masters chat. He was even channeling that Augusta spirit alongside Shane and off the ball yesterday with a glorious green hoodie, possibly from Zara, while making it absolutely clear that Rory McIlroy will never caress that luscious green felt.
That jumper is not from Zara. It's from a website. It's about 15 years old. It's from, if you know Adam, if you know Adam Hurry, who does the football cliches for, I was on board with his stuff early, and on the back of the hoodie is reads, "I've done it on a wet and windy Wednesday night in Stoke."
What did you do?
I don't know. I bought this hoodie. I'll leave it up to the imagination. But it's obviously on the back, so I don't think Shane was sitting beside it and doesn't appear to have seen it at all. So
no, never even dawned on me. That probably would have just flown straight over my head. I was struggling enough with your parallels with 1960s Bob Dylan, leaving me sitting there like a fucking idiot who knew nothing.
No, he knows that once he starts mentioning a bit of Bob Dylan, the Arthur, the producer, will keep on getting him back on. So he knows. That, like, Gav knows how to play this game, Shane.
I can't disagree with any of that. Masters is... World Cup is obviously my favourite sports tournament. The Masters is definitely my favourite sports tournament that happens every year, I think. So, can't wait. But loads of football chat to get into before all that.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to continue. I think I actually owe the Masters and that actually a way of winning over my father-in-law. Because when I first started going out with my now wife, one of the lads who I used to work with in the mail, Shane McGrath, went to cover it. And I said to him, is there any chance you can get something from the Masters? Because obviously father-in-law mad at the golf. And fair play, he brought back some Masters golf balls.
Unreal.
Which your father-in-law still has, never used, because he said they were too precious to actually use.
that was a good start. Well yeah. Done, you.
Yeah, so I'm
not surprised that you did feel the need to win him over, though.
Well, of course, you have to kind of show a little bit of respect. You know what I mean? Like, listen, I'm an acquired taste.
your niche market, David.
Yeah. I was going to make a comment there, but I won't. What is the football we want to get into? I was gonna make a joke about if any Liverpool fans didn't want to listen to golf chat, you could just like go back and just imagine what today could have felt like if their strikers and midfielders weren't geek in front of goal.
They're so wasteful, aren't they? And it's gonna cost them the league. It's gonna cost them the league, I think, now.
That's why I was gonna make the point that before, because I'm gonna let you chat, but this is what I think will cost Liverpool the league, because it was a game they dominated. And if you're that wasteful in that kind of game, like, when the pressure comes on even more, and it's mad even saying that considering something like Salah, I suppose, is the only striker there who's actually won the league, Premier League anyway, in that Liverpool team. But like, if they can't, and even the chances were really good, it's not as if there were a couple of half chances or stuff, even some of the passes, like the one gotten into it, but like, I couldn't get over it. The pass from Diaz to Salah when they broke, and he plays it about 2 yards behind them, and you're just like, that wasn't a difficult pass. It's not like as if it's the end of the game or the last little bit or under a huge amount of pressure. That is such a simple pass and you can't play it.
They're just so imprecise and so wasteful. And look, they have been on the receiving end of some very high profile bad refereeing decisions. Obviously the Luis Diaz goal that wasn't given against Spurs, obvious penalties not given at home to Arsenal and Man City. So when the league table shakes out, and if Liverpool miss out narrowly, they can blame them, okay, and it's fair enough for them if that's what they want to do. But at the same time, if you can't beat that Man United team home and away, home or away, and then also get knocked out of the FA Cup by them, do you really deserve to be winning the league? Like, they're a bit madder than either City or Arsenal. They've less control over games. But the games in which they've had control, they've missed so many chances. Like, so many chances at home to United, so many chances away to United. big chances in that spell after halftime against Man City at home, and even at home to Arsenal, that this big 4-on-2 or 5-on-2 break, and it ends with Alexander Arnold smacking the bar. Like, they used to be such killers on those counter attacks, and they're just not anymore because Nunez and Diaz have their qualities, but they're not killers like Mane and Firmino. Salah has come back from the injury he got at AFCON looking about 10 years older. It's crazy. And I think the most salient fact of all of this is that of those games in which they created chances at home to Arsenal, at home to United, at home to City, and away to United, Diogo Jota played the sum total of 0 minutes. He's the killer in the squad, and he's just missed too many games through injury.
Yeah, look, it's you know, we obviously kind of talk about the title run in most weeks, so we do, and I've kind of been fairly consistent in that. I've been sticking with City all along. I've been sticking with City all along exactly because of this kind of blip. When Nunez is on it, he's very, very good, but it's literally 50-50. Like, you don't know which Nunez is going to turn up from one game to the next. And Diaz is probably falls into a similar bowl. Like Gav said, for all the qualities, the one quality they don't have is consistency. And when you don't have consistency in the final third, and the one man that you are probably over-reliant on hasn't been firing on all cylinders, certainly hasn't been firing all cylinders pretty much in 2024. In Salah, I felt it had to catch up eventually. Now, it's still caught up in more spectacular style than I would have thought. Like, I was looking at the Opta stats on it. Like, Opta class, I think it is a big chance as something that they would expect to be taken roughly 1 in 3 times. Liverpool had 7 big chances yesterday. So And that's obviously where they do end up with a shot on target, as you say. Some of the chances don't even get classed as chances yesterday because they didn't result in a chance, because they didn't execute the pass beforehand. But they're just... Look, to be honest with you, when we were preparing yesterday actually to go on News Talk, David, initially I was reading the Liverpool piece that was in yesterday's Times, I think it was, and then we knocked that talk in the head when we knew the show was going to be going on after the actual game was on. Like, reading about Klopp again, I actually think if Liverpool win the league this year, I think it goes down arguably as Klopp's greatest achievement, because, like, when you look at the amount of injuries that they've had to absolute key players, when you look at the drop-off in quality compared to the last time that they won it, I think it would be absolutely remarkable. I think it would be pretty much purely Klopp's personality, almost, that single-handedly would have won the title. For Klopp's personality and Virgil van Dijk. Let's be honest. Like, if Liverpool win the league, there'll be only one contender for who could be named as player of the year. He is the one absolute still shining light. Others have come to the fore at various different points, but how many? I know, like, this is such a cliched question, but like, how many of Liverpool's team would actually make the Manchester City starting 11? You know, I don't think there's too many. And the team I'm talking about that's playing on a regular basis. Bit of a stretch still.
He doesn't even make Liverpool's first 11.
Exactly. So I say this all as a compliment to Klopp. For me, the fact that he still had them as, were they title favourites, I think, heading into yesterday's game still? Or heading into the weekend, let's say, before the other two got their wins anyway.
Well, they would have went back top, whether or not. That's apparently, there's a supercomputer out there that still says that City, and you look at the fixture run in. Although City's game with Spurs, it has to be scheduled, doesn't it? But yeah, I had fancied Liverpool for a bit, but maybe the fact that I think Jota could be coming back training soon. I was reading that, and Alexander Arnold as well. So maybe getting a bit of reinforcement, like, that could be a bit of a boost. Because I genuinely was thinking, and I made the point in the piece that I did just for the site yesterday, just because, like, Jesus, it's just so obvious that if Liverpool had came away from that with the win that they should have easily have had, which could have been 4 or 5, you would have thought, given them such a boost going into that running. That's where I was coming from, but from the point of view of, like, you look at Klopp, like, I was just referencing it, like, Klopp did look almost like so downbeat when he went over to the Liverpool fans at the end, and normally what he's like after games, and I know we kind of put up a brave face and saying, oh, it's okay, yeah, it's our fault, blah, blah, blah. But, like, you need every kind of little advantage, be it mental or all the rest of it. Because again, I reference this, not this whole thing of, you know, we don't look at what others do, but that the one, I haven't seen the documentary, but I just saw the clip going on social media of the City players last season in the dressing room. I think they're playing Nottingham Forest, watching, literally Calvin Phillips had it on his phone in the corner of the dressing room, watching Arsenal score late against Aston Villa to win the game in the early kickoff. And even Guardiola is scribbling stuff on the kind of tactics board or whatever, and then leaves it and then jumps onto the bench to kind of peer over to see what the crack is as well. And that's in the dressing room before the match, before they're going out to warm up. So like, this whole nonsense of, you know, we're only focusing ourselves, that's what they put out there. But every little advantage, and if Liverpool are going to Old Trafford and winning 4-5, which they should have done, let's be honest, like they really should have, you can't say that's not going to have some kind of detrimental effect on City, regardless of how successful they've been, just in terms of where Liverpool are at and also where Arsenal.
Yeah, and Klopp and Van Dijk both sounded as if they'd lost the game afterwards, to the point where Klopp said it felt like a defeat. It's just the manner in which they didn't win. I mean, they were just so dominant. Again, it felt unnecessary to drop points there. And it's always one of Liverpool's tougher, maybe their toughest game of the season in many ways, that, before you start looking at the merits or otherwise of the teams and how they match up and so forth, going to Old Trafford is always maybe a bit more difficult for Liverpool than it is most other teams, just because A, what United are best at is what Liverpool are weakest at in terms of being susceptible to counter-attacks, definitely down the right-hand side. Not playing Konate made zero sense to me. It was a bizarre call from Klopp, because Konate was fit enough to be on the bench. Kwanza obviously makes the mistake for Bruno's goal. I thought he actually did all right apart from that. But Konate, I mean, all the Liverpool's big results against United have come when Kanate's in the team. And also, I can't remember in the last, 15 years, have Liverpool ever won a tight game at Old Trafford? Anytime they have won, it's been a bit of a blowout. You know, there was a 4-1 under Benitez, a 3-0 under Rodgers, and then, what, a 4-2 and a 5-0 under Klopp. Otherwise, it's been draws and defeats. And so, like, on paper, you might think at the start of the season, a draw at Old Trafford's not the worst, but the context of the title race means it is effectively, it does feel like a defeat for Liverpool. I think if they can win all the remaining games, I think they might still win the league, but I don't think they're good enough to win the remaining games. I don't see City dropping points against anyone that's not Spurs, and I'm not even convinced they'll drop points there. And Arsenal are also, like, you know, you do wonder, Arsenal have by far the toughest fixture list of all three. But if you saw them against Brighton, they're just chloroform in these games. Like, they do not give up chances. Like I thought they were, like, they've been low-key. That was low-key brilliant against Brighton at the weekend. Brighton are not what they were, but they're still good enough because of how they play to create chances against anyone. They didn't really create any against Arsenal. Like, you're picking a goalkeeper of the season. Like, it's really hard to pick one now, I have to say, because Ederson's not been of the level he usually is. Alisson's been injured. And then you're thinking, is it David Raya? And Raya, he hardly...
I was going to say, does he have enough work to do?
Doesn't have any saves to make.
No.
That Rice, Saliba, Gabriel triangle, like, their structure is so good. And even if you can get through that, Saliba, Gabriel, Rice, they're not giving you anything, like, you know, so...
Is Keller? I think, would Keller be in the mix for a goalkeeper?
I don't think he's played enough. To be honest, it's a tangent. I'd probably go Vicario from Spurs, because it's his first season. He's played every week and hasn't pretty good. But sorry, that's a bit of a tangent. But yeah, very very costly for Liverpool.
On a tangent, and this is just so you can compose your thoughts. But Dundalk have just confirmed that Stephen O'Donnell has been relieved of his duties as head coach. Statement says that they've also parted ways with Padge Craig, his assistant, and they would like to thank Stephen Padge for their efforts over the past 2.5 years. Now, this is obviously a podcast, so this won't be breaking news, but I just wanted to say that that's obviously what's happened. We will come back to it later on the pod, so just kind of mentally take that in, and we'll have a chat about that in a bit. Obviously Dundalk have struggled. There's also quite a few Irish players struggling in the Premier League this season. There's going to be a few getting relegated, going back down to the Championship, if you actually look at of where things are at. What's your kind of it looks as if Sheffield United are down. Like, Johnny Egan injury hasn't really got a kick this season, really, has he? That's going to be a shame for him. Burnley, Josh Cullen, Darragh O'Shea, obviously Darragh O'Shea sent off the weekend, losing that big game against Everton. Seamus Coleman could lead Everton out at that new stadium in Ballymore as a Premier League player, possibly, if he's still there. Nathan Collins, Brentford, they're still not Luton Town,
Benny. Nah, they'll be. I think they'll be all right. I think Everton and Brentford will be all right. To be honest, which I'd be surprised. I think it's 3 from 4. I think if anybody who's Forest, obviously, are fourth from bottom at the moment, but I probably have seen enough in Luton that if I was betting at the moment, I'd be back in Luton to haul in Forest. Now, in saying that, I then quickly look across here and have a bit of a glance at the fixture list. Well, I see, yeah, Forest have Wolves at home, Sheffield United away, Burnley away. They're probably the games they'd hope to pick points up in. Luton don't really have any massive easy ones. Home to Brentford, home to Everton, home to Fulham. Yeah, Luton probably have the tougher run in, that said, just looking between the two at the minute.
Yeah.
No, I'd say Collins will be fine. I'd say Seamus Coleman will be fine. I would love to see Luton. maybe that's why I feel Luton can reel in Forest, is because my heart is willing it to happen. You'd love to see, be such a shame for Bennett to go back down. Like, he's looked at home more often than not at this level. And because he's only been there for such a short space of time, it's very hard to see him leaving again and getting another chance at the Premier. You'd imagine he stays at Luton if Luton go down.
Mm.
And I just think, yeah, I think he's been really exciting this year in the Premier. He's been, look, he's not been a steadfast mainstay part of the team. He's been in and out of the team. They have a few different options there. Obviously, he's bounced around in a couple of different positions, but I would certainly have felt that he has done enough this season to justify that he's good enough to operate at this level. But, like, one season, you never know how careers go. Like, you know, if you don't get a second season at it straight away, do you ever actually get a second season at it? Like, he should do.
That's a good
he
point.
Should do. He has the quality.
That's a good point.
But you just can't be sure.
But that's actually a really good point, is he? Like, the last thing you want is, you know, well, one of those players who kind of blitzes across the season and has some really good moments, and we're willing them to do more, but then maybe you're not able to sustain. There's been a couple of injuries, and then you're thinking, is that it? But, like, because the story is such a great one, you'd love to see now in terms of him being able to get another chance. And that's if you're looking at it, like, realistically. I know obviously clubs can yo-yo back up and down and all the rest of it, but of the players you mentioned there, like, who has that ceiling, that potential to stay in and get another move?
Do you know what actually didn't strike me until I was arguing it there? That doesn't put us in the plus column, technically, on Irish players, because I'm relegating Androm Abamadeli there, aren't I?
Yeah, Forrest, yeah. And he's been playing the last little while as well, hasn't he?
Yeah. Someone's going to have to go by the pure mathematics of it. I know he got sent off the weekend. I just think Darrow Shea's had a pretty good season.
Yeah, he has.
Burnley, I don't think I'd be into looking at him through my green tinted glasses and saying
he was also one of the first.
He's been pretty good.
He was one. I remember I did a piece on O'Shea's move to Burnley, from speaking to people at Burnley and obviously around O'Shea, about how that move came about. And it was interesting is that company had identified him very early, made him priority, and kind of when he was not so much selling the move, because obviously he was getting the move to the Premier League, but basically saying he viewed him as the potential to be a player who is top 8, top 6 in the Premier League.
Really?
That's interesting.
Now, that's what had been kind of laid out to him in terms of what he felt. I'll be honest, you see some of it. He's in an Ireland team that has been struggling. He's in a team in Burnley that have been struggling. But you mentioned, and this is maybe a bit of a tangent, and I wonder though it's worth, obviously we remember had this conversation last week, say, in a different level about Josh Honohan getting signed from Cork to Rovers, and Rovers identifying maybe talent in a player, and obviously if a player is at a certain level, he's got to struggle in a certain team, that goes out, maybe goes out saying if they're down the bottom. But like, it's up to obviously coaches and scouts, did he see something in a player, even in a squad that's struggling, saying, well, actually, we put him into our system and how we play, and he'd actually excel, or he might look like a much better player. Like, I could be totally wrong here, but I could imagine him playing for, this is, maybe this is green tinted glasses, but I could easily imagine him playing for a Fulham, a Bournemouth, or a Wolves, who are all around that 13th to 11th position in the Premier League at the moment. I don't see any, like, that's, or maybe I'm just maybe being a bit biased just because of the Irish angle there. That's obviously about O'Shea.
Yeah. No, look, I have been impressed with him this year. In a team, as much as you can be impressed with a player, a defender in a team that's struggling, I think he has done reasonably well. And, like, do you know what will actually work reasonably well? Like, you might think, would managers actually read too much into this? I think they would. I think this whole thing of Ogbene clocking the, what was it, like Bennett clocked the fourth fastest time in the Premier League this year. Darrell Shea clocked the sixth or seventh. Yeah. That really surprised me at the time. But that's a good number for him to have out there. That's a really, really good number for him to have out there, because I always, as a manager and as a coach, I tend to back myself that give me a player with the raw materials and I'll teach him how to understand the game enough, or I'll improve him enough technically that will make even more out of those raw materials. And speed is arguably the most important raw material in the Premier League at the moment. It's right up there. I think that will certainly work in his favour. I mean, again, you look at... you look at Spurs and Forest yesterday in a game that, as you say, Andrew Mabamadeli was decent yesterday. But again, the most eye-catching thing in yesterday's game for me was the absolute ridiculous pace of Mickey van de Ven. It's just insane how fast he moves. And if you've got a defender in Darrell Shea who's, you know, not a million miles behind him, you know, I think a lot of managers will look at that and go, yeah, well, look, I can play a high line now because I've got that guy, or he's got the recovery capacity to be able to dig himself out of trouble for the few mistakes that he might make in a season. I think all of that works very, very much in his favour, and certainly will keep him in the mind and in the eye line of Premier League managers, even if he does go down.
So you'd imagine then that, like, at that point you make, but and this is the thing as well, like, we're coming into April now, clubs will already have targets. They would have already been speaking to players for the summer about reinforcements and all the rest of it. But as you say there, like, it's that mix now of going down the, obviously you're gonna have to stay loyal again. I remember the story, I think it was Stephen Waugh told it, about Sean Dyche at the first time he was Burnley were in the not the first time they were in the Premier League, but the first time under Dyche when they were in the Premier League and they'd been relegated, and they had a couple of games to go, I think it was, or whatever it was, and he kind of said, listen, we've had offers for a few, we know you're gone. I think Trippier was going to Spurs, and I think Danny Ings went to, was it Liverpool or Southampton? Did Ings go to Liverpool from Burnley, I think it was?
Liverpool.
But he was like, just, we know obviously moves are happening for lads, and somebody has wanted out and all the rest of it. But this is now where you're kind of thinking, that's maybe what some players are going to be looking at, isn't it? Like, or will they be getting them? I don't know. Are they going to have to just grin and bear it and come back down, and we're going to be talking about another core of Irish players in the national team? We haven't actually spoken with the Ireland manager, thank God. But like, about playing the championship again. Do you know what I mean, Gav? That's kind of rinse and repeat cycle. Nothing again. Like, nothing sustained, really, you know?
This season has been better for Irish players in the Premier League. Like, the last couple of seasons have been, in terms, if you look at the number of minutes clocked up by Irish players in the Premier League, had been on a slide. I think, like, the record low of two seasons ago was beaten by a new record low last season. That's all changed this season. There's been far more Premier League involvement, which is great. We came close. It was theoretically possible, I think, to pick a team of just Premier League players during the recent international window, which would have been the first time since, I think, Brian Kerr was the manager, if I'm right. Maybe Staunton. So, I mean, things are improving in some respect, but whereas 20 years ago we were, like, we had players Champions League level and upper mid-table, now the majority of them, unfortunately, are scrapping it out at the bottom. That's reflective of the increase in the standard in the Premier League. Like, I actually think, you know, what was upper mid-table 10 or 15 years ago might be actually lower mid-table now, you know? I really think that, certainly in terms of how the styles and so forth has changed. But, yeah, that kind of Premier League involvement for Irish players will remain pretty volatile, because they're largely, as we say, among player teams at the bottom. And if Southampton don't come up, we'll be struggling for numbers.
I was just going to throw that out. Have we Manny potentially coming the other way? We wouldn't really. There's nobody at Leicester, is there?
Nobody at Leicester. Tom Cannon, but we don't know whether Tom Cannon believes he's Irish or English yet. Can't think of anyone else off the top of my head. There's
the winger, Mac, is it Mac? McAteer.
Oh yeah, Casey McAteer. You're right. Yeah, that does seem to be. What Stephen Kenny said last October, that he was close to getting on board, and John O'Shea didn't say anything to tell us that anything has changed on that front. Leeds, I can't think of anyone off the top of my head. Ipswich, I can't think of any. There's Jack Taylor at Ipswich, actually.
I was just going to say, good Longford man, Gaff.
Apparently so. Oh, is he? Is that where he's?
Yeah.
Well, that's brilliant. We have Sammy Smodics as well. I mean, Europe's hottest striker.
Is he Longford as well?
He's originally Longford, yeah. That's
Is he, yeah?
Yeah, Longford, and grandparents from, like, I think it was a grandmother from somewhere in Longford and a grandfather from somewhere in Hungary.
Ips and Shout. Well, you mentioned Jack Teddy, but for Man-a-Man as a manager, that would be nice to have an Irishman possibly making waves in the Premier League, considering the job he's done at Ips, which has been incredible.
Unreal.
And but then, even West Brom, they're always in the playoffs, aren't they? Like, they're always there. Like, Jason Malumbi's had a bit of a brilliant one. He's out injured, isn't he, for the rest of the season? Think looking here, Norwich, Alameda, but he's, I don't know whether he'll go back to Norwich, you know what I mean?
Nah, Celtic don't want to keep him, won't they?
What do you reckon, Shane? Would you keep Alameda? I'm guessing you would have been.
Definitely. No, they'll definitely want to keep him. Such a killer that, you know, that didn't turn out to be a winning goal from yesterday. No. It would have been absolutely class. It really, really would. But
it might be a bit OTT, but like had Matondo not scored and Celtic not conceded that goal, like, to score a last gasp winner in an Old Firm derby to send Celtic clear at the top, like, that's the kind of thing on which a career can change a little bit, you know? Like, I mean,
it's the kind of thing Shane gets tattooed of.
I was on the way down to the tattoo parlour when they equalised, David.
But it's a good point, Gav, you're right though, isn't it? Like, you know what I mean? Sometimes it could be not so much career defining, but as you say, just give you a bit of a boost or just do something or just catapult you on.
Well, if nothing else, it would always give him a legacy at Celtic. You know, regardless of what happens from here on in. Like, I mean, we haven't had
Paul Byrne. Look at Paul Byrne. Paul Byrne is still living off that.
He doesn't like to talk about it. Good goal though, fairness.
Yeah,
good
right.
goal.
Was. Cracker.
There's definitely no involvement in the Champions League, Irish involvement in the Champions League. Or is there? I don't think there is there? No? Real Madrid.
Former Ireland assistant Anthony Barry, still clinging on at Bayern Munich.
There we go.
That's maybe who we'll take.
Do you know what word I've never heard more of than in the last couple of years associated with football? And bear in mind if I'm wrong here, Jeopardy. Literally, apparently now the word Jeopardy, literally I used to recognise it as a game show in America, right? But now it's all about, I know obviously the Champions League format has changed and people are going on about, we want Jeopardy, we want blah, blah, blah. Now we're going to be getting it now in the knockout stages, obviously, in terms of the games that we've got, because like Arsenal, Bayern Munich, that's going to be really good. And obviously Real Madrid obviously against Man City. They're the games on Tuesday, and then Wednesday, Atletico Madrid, Borussia Dortmund, and then PSG against Barcelona. But there's the games tomorrow. I just love to see Jude Bellingham smash a hat-trick for Madrid against City.
I just think Madrid have the... Obviously, Madrid absolutely hammered by City. What was it, 4-0 at the Etihad, and kind of the signature performance, I think, of the Guardiola era. I think Madrid have the tools to hurt City across these two legs. I have to say, you could see they've been struggling a little bit with direct counter-attacks against Villa and Palace in the last couple of weeks. And Villa and Palace do not have Vinicius and Rodrigo and Jude Bellingham loading the bullets. I really do think that, okay, the Madrid have been kind of decimated by defensive injuries this season, but I think Eder Militao is back fit now. He'll be a big player for them. There's been times this season they've had to play Tchouaméni at centre-half. It's been that bad. But Courtois still out. Kepa was brought in on loan, but has not impressed to the point where they're just playing Andre Lunin now, the perennial backup goalkeeper from Ukraine. So I actually think City are favourites to go through, and maybe they'll just edge it, but I think it's going to be a much tighter tie this time around than it was last season, and I think that Madrid have the counter-attacking tools to really make City uncomfortable.
I agree 100%, yeah. I'd nearly edge Real in my head. I think they're perfect. I couldn't agree more. I think they're perfectly set up. Like, you look at their strengths, if you were to write down the manner in which you could possibly get at this City team, Real's strengths are perfectly suited to it. And, you know, I thought the bookies and that have City kind of slight favourites. They're bloody 1-2. I don't see that at all. I don't see how City can be that heavy favourites against this side, really, to be honest with you. It's a pit. Like, what's your take on do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing that the big four have ended up on one side of the draw as opposed to the other? Like, in an ideal world, surely we wanted these as our two semi-finals rather than our two quarterfinals. I'll tell you what I definitely wanted in an ideal world. Didn't want the two bloody games to be on the same night as I'm going up to the Aviva for Ireland and England women's match. That's an absolute killer. That's all
happening. It's a disaster. It's a disaster. Oh.
Listen, but like, listen, the jeopardy will still be there after the fourth leg. Hopefully.
At least it's not clashing with the second legs, I suppose. And then like Arsenal, Bayern, like I know, like Bayern have now blown up. You know, I mean, there was a point up to a few weeks ago, and even when they announced that Tuchel would be staying on, where obviously they were still trailing Bayer Leverkusen, but Bayern's points total was actually really good. It's just that Leverkusen set this insane pace. Mm. But now Bayern have blown up completely. Like, I mean, they managed to lose Dortmund. I think they were 2-0 up against Heidenheim at the weekend and lost 3-2. Tuchel had conceded the title after the Dortmund game. And now, while they're guaranteeing that Tuchel will be on the sideline on Tuesday night, they're not really given many guarantees as to whether he'll be around till the end of the season. So you'd imagine that the moment they go out of the Champions League, Tuchel might have to sling his hook. But I do think that, like, how do you hurt Arsenal? It's so hard to do it. Like, I mean, they just don't give up many chances. They're really defensively sound. Obviously, the narrative is there for Harry Kane to trouble the team he once supported. But I think maybe they've got the pace and in wide areas to trouble Arsenal is the only thing. Like, you'd imagine Zinchenko won't keep his place in the team if, you know, he's likely to come up against the likes of Kingsley Coman or even Tell or Gnabry or Leroy Sané. But I'd be more confident that Arsenal would knock Bayern out than I would be that City would knock Real out.
And on that, Gav, I don't know, do you know anymore? Because I was actually looking at the lineup from the weekend to see how they're fixed at the moment. And who wasn't there? There was no Sané. There was no Kingsley Coman. And I'm just wondering, yeah, all exactly. Right. Now, I don't know, was that a case of the title is done, therefore, now they weren't even on the bench, like, but I was just wondering, was that a case of the title is done, therefore we won't worry about it, or are those players actually out? I will be interested to see the team news heading into that, because if those two players are out, geez, they would be two fairly big ones to be missing, because I think it's normally three from four, isn't it, between, and that's even relegating Thomas Muller as not being in with a chance of starting, which obviously come the big games, he probably is back in with a chance of starting, but like Musiala, Serge Gnabry, Kingsley Coman and Sané, like that's four seriously attacking direct quality players. And you would think if they were able to go with any three of those four, again, it does give them the kind of tools you would think that are best suited to trying to cause Arsenal problems.
Mm. Yeah. The good news for Bayern and for the Tottenham fans in this call is that Sané and Coman were back in training yesterday, along with Mazraoui, Pavlovic and Manuel Neuer. So it seems like it'll be a pretty well-stocked Bayern team that'll face Arsenal. So that's some cold comfort for you.
You seem to be jumping to the conclusion that I'm going to be shouting for Bayern in this match. What gives you that opinion, Gavin? Yes, I am absolutely screaming for Bayern in these games. Multiply the hatred for Arsenal multiplied by my love for Harry Kane, and I think I'm arguably more invested in this game than I have been in any Spurs game this season, which says a lot about me.
Harry Kane has scored 38 goals this season,
hasn't
he?
Harry Kane is just wonderful. So he is absolutely wonderful. He can do everything. I bet he has the most assists in.
He can do everything except win the league. It's quite extraordinary that he's ended up going to Bayern the 1 year where they don't win the league.
League titles are overrated. That's what us Spurs fans feel, Gav.
Well, you've already flagged it that the games on Tuesday do obviously clash with the Ireland Women's Euro 2025 qualifier with England. Gav, you are back from France. You were in Metz for the 1-0 defeat against France.
Yeah.
What's changed? Has anything changed? We spoke about it, about how Ireland performed in that game, God, but then obviously looking into the game against England. Obviously Shane was right, I'll bow down,
bow a bit more. You're saying we all bow down, but you're not bowing down.
Listen, if I bow down anymore, this turns into a dangerous podcast, okay?
What's changed?
But we're seeing them in the flesh and how they operate and how they are set up and all the rest of it, and just other than maybe I saw Kate McCain coming in for a bit of flack, for how she performed, which is always going to be the case when you are maybe the standout player in the team, which so much kind of hope riding that view performance going to be the difference maybe for getting a result. But like, was there a kind of progress that we were hoping to see in how Ireland set up and how they played? Shane, stop sniggering, please. Thank you.
Yeah, when you ask what's changed, I mean, Lekeep certainly didn't think much had changed, because along with their player ratings, they named the Irish manager as Vera Pauw, so they obviously didn't see a whole lot different than they saw the World Cup. The game plan wasn't very different. It was 5-4-1 out of possession, really, to be honest. But can Ireland play any other way against France? I mean, especially when you see them in the flesh, like the gulf in class is absolutely enormous. And it's not just a gulf in technical quality, it's a gulf in physicality and a gulf in athleticism. And just in ways in which they can manipulate the ball and work passing triangles, especially down either wing, in ways that Ireland seemingly just simply can't do. So I know the general narrative out there to the casual fan is that, sure, we thought Vera Pauw was doing well, but obviously the players wanted her out because they wanted to play better football. Well, look what they're serving up now. And I think that would be a bit unfair, ultimately, on Eileen Gleeson, because I don't think Ireland could have played very differently in Metz on Friday night. The big difference is that Katie McCabe was not picked at left wing back. She was she was left wing, I suppose, really. She was pretty advanced. And this was one of the bones of contention under how Pauw played, is that if Ireland are going to sit deep and take chances against these big sides, they're not going to have many chances. Who do you want taking them? You want Denise O'Sullivan, and you want especially Katie McCabe on the end of Ireland's best chances. And if, with 3 minutes of normal time to go, if Leanne Kiernan can see Katie McCabe completely unmarked in the penalty area and square it to her, McCabe scores there. She's completely unmarked, just to the right of the penalty spot. It was a glorious chance. But Kiernan, I hope for Kiernan's sake, she didn't see her, because she just thumped this nothing cross to nobody across the box, and the chance was gone. And if that squared and McCabe scores, Eileen Gleeson is heralded as a tactical genius, to be quite honest, because she sat deep, she's only conceded once, and then she's picked the team in such a way that's liberated McCabe to go up the field and score the equalising goal. So I think if you're looking at what's different, I think that's the key difference. I think they'll be sickened at themselves at the goal that they conceded. Like, France are a great team, so don't go giving them gifts like you gave them after 5 minutes. A goal from a set piece. Lacroix gets up unimpeded at the back post, head the ball across, and then Katoto is just completely unmarked from a yard out to tap it in, because I think the ball was maybe going to come off the post or maybe just going to skittle wide. And the free kick was conceded down Ireland's right. Heather Payne gave away a really lazy free kick, but she was already tired 5 minutes in because Ireland were sliced apart down that wing. Emily Murphy, picked for her first start, just could offer nothing defensively to help Payne. And that left-hand side, especially with Delphine Cascarino, was a major problem for Ireland. They adjusted it at half-time. Aoife Mannion swapped from left-wing back to right-wing back. I thought it worked pretty well. I thought Mannion played pretty well. Out of position. You don't want to say, as a centre-half, I can imagine, would hate to be that far outside their own box and in that much space and up against that much pace. I still think she did pretty well. Brosnan was obviously Ireland's outstanding player. But McCabe wasn't at her best. I don't think that's controversial thing to say, but I think the big disappointment for Ireland was Denise O'Sullivan's performance. She was way off it, and you know, Ireland didn't have many counter-attacking opportunities. They had one shot and none of them were actually on target. But in first half stoppage time, O'Sullivan charges down Lacroix, the centre back. She's out of position. Caruso makes the right run, and O'Sullivan just overcooks the pass through for her, and the chance was gone. Ireland are going to be feeding off scraps. Well, they were fed off scraps in Metz. Be feeding off scraps in every game in this group. They have to take what few chances that they have, and for that you're reliant on O'Sullivan and McKay being absolutely at it, and neither really were on Friday night.
Optimistic for Tuesday, for tomorrow, in that place you're going to be there. You'll be covering with Fennel and with Emmett. Like, I just saw the English were doing their press conference at the moment in the Aviva, and Serena Wiegman was confirming that Leah Williamson is going to be getting her first cap after 12 months out with an ACL injury. So obviously it's a big high profile player coming back into it for England, and you look around, you're saying about the golf in class, you would imagine it's going to be similar on Tuesday in terms of, you look at some of the players, like some of the standout players from the World Cup are Lauren Hemp and Lauren James, do you know what I mean? And they are just frightening talents, really.
Yeah. A 1-1 draw for England against Sweden, and I didn't see the game, but all the reports I've read suggest that Sweden sat pretty deep and then picked England off in the counter-attack, and that's what Ireland will probably have to do. It's almost complicated by being at home. I do think, I think they're hoping to get around 30,000 people at the Aviva Stadium, which is a decent crowd. I do wonder to what extent the crowd will expect Ireland to have a go, and to what extent the crowd will be frustrated in that respect.
Yeah, and that's the catch 22 for Eileen Devo. It's probably not even a catch 22 for her. Like, she has to go about it. She has to go about this game in the manner that gives them the best possible chance of getting something from the game, as slim and all as I might feel the chances of us getting anything from the game are. I would say that our best opportunity is a nil-all draw. It probably is. And you sit back and you soak it up, and you do obviously try and play on the counter. But as somebody who's going as a spectator and, say, bringing my niece with me and wanting her to be badgering me, looking to go to more games after this, I'm a little bit afraid of I'm a little bit afraid of what she's going to make of tomorrow night if that's how we go about it. So there's a part of me saying, come on, let's have a go. And is a 3-1 defeat a better outcome than a 1-0 defeat in a boar fest? But look, if you're in Eileen Gleeson's shoes, you'd imagine the template has got to be pretty similar to what we went about doing the other night.
Just to finish on, but Gav, you flagged it there in terms of what Sweden were able to do against England and how they kind of were able to basically carry out that game plan, and you flagged earlier as well with Leanne Kiernan's pass to maybe Kate McKay, that it can be those small margins. Like, are Ireland going to actually be capable against a team like England to do the same and carry a similar threat? I don't know.
Yeah. It's hard to know, and I know I'm holding up that square to Katie McCabe chance as a chance, but you know it's not. It's a chance to have a chance, if that makes any sense. And Ireland, it was Kiernan, didn't have the quality and the temperament to see the pass and make it, you know, so that maybe that makes you think maybe they won't. I know it's very hard to see Ireland get anything out of the game, to be honest. The brutal thing for them is that there's not, you know, Sweden will be probably almost just as hard as the France and England games, really, to be honest. Obviously, they've got it, they've drawn in Sweden beforehand under Vera Pauw, but there's no, you know, there's no kind of minnow in the group, or there's no team where you can be confident that you will score a couple of goals against them and we can get at least 4 points against them and, you know, make everything look a little bit better. But yeah, it's hard. It's just hard to see it. I just think Ireland just aren't as good as these guys.
So we flagged it a little bit earlier when we're starting the pod, that Stephen O'Donnell is no longer the manager of Dundalk. Obviously comes in the back of pretty poor start to the season, and the fact that, what, 8 games played, no wins, 5 defeats, bottom of the table on 3 points, draw to who they had drawn with the Monday before last, 4 points clear of them, and they were beaten 4-1 by Derry on Friday. And I suppose the writing was maybe on the wall just for the last couple of weeks, like in terms of just how maybe just the fact that they're still winless, they need that little bit of a bounce, they need something to change. And obviously the decision at this point, gonna obviously be making a few calls on it now over the next little while to see what's the reason being, but it's clear that they thought, well, the easiest change to make to try and get results to change was to get rid of the head coach, Shane.
Yeah. And look, it wasn't, even though it was a comprehensive defeat on Friday night, I don't think, you know, I don't think that's actually the game that got him the sack, if that makes sense. You know, you can probably get away with losing up in Derry 4-1. Plenty of other teams will lose up in Derry 4-1 or by similar margins over the course of the rest of the season. It's what can be for. It's what can be for. To go the Friday, Monday with just 1 point over the bank holiday weekend was poor. Look, I know one of those games again was against Tabletoppers Shells. So really the one over the last 7 days that you're pointing to is that home draw against Drogheda. Even though it's the only point they picked up in the 7 days, was actually the most damaging result of the three, in my opinion, definitely. Like, realistically, how do Dundalk not go down this season? And the way Dundalk don't go down this season is by finishing one place above Drogheda. Whatever way you look at it, that's the reality of it. And not only did they not get the result that they needed in that game, but by all accounts, and I'll hold my hand up and say I didn't see the game, but by all accounts, if anybody was going to win that game based on what was served up, I think Drogheda had the edge by all accounts in it. So that was really, really damaging one. The other one, by the way, that, you know, if you're not a Dundalk fan, probably slipped under the radar, but if you are a Dundalk fan, I would say certainly didn't slip under the radar, was that Leinster Senior Cup defeat to St Mochtus. Because if you look at the team sheet that night, they had, like, Dundalk had a really, really strong lineup out. Yeah. A really strong lineup. And, you know, if you're in the boardroom, or if you're a fan on the terrace, but certainly I'm just thinking of it from the boardroom side. If you're in the boardroom and you're looking at that lineup and the result that came that night, I think a lot of them who maybe still had a large amount of faith in Stephen having the capability to turn it around maybe would have lost quite a bit of the faith based on a really atrocious result like that. So look, it's not, you'd love to say it's one that's come out of blue. That hasn't been the case. Did it ever really, really get going from there? You know, it's such a pity for him because, you know, he's up there as one of the all-time greats for them as a player, you know, as a leader, as a player, based on what he achieved there. He is almost your go-to man, nearly, of the Stephen Kenny era and all of the success that they had up there. And
that's why they went to him. They went to him when he had that success at Pats, and, like, and obviously a lot of acrimony on that end of it and gone there. And obviously he was gone there on the basis that this was a Dundalk that were building, going to try and build something that had happened, materialised when he was a player. And within the space of a year, there's new owners, the financial side of what's happening becomes a lot more apparent, and then a kind of a young head coach who is developing a bit of a reputation as pretty impressive, basically is relieved of his duties, and you kind of see that other side of the game of how quickly things can change.
Yeah, and look, like, there'll be no tears shed over Richmond, that's for sure, because it was, you know, it was a very rare scenario in management where, like, almost always, if a manager is at a club and he leaves that club to go to another club, well, then it's, you know, it's almost certainly, undoubtedly, a step up. Why else would you be leaving the club you're leaving to go to another club if you're under, you know, if you're well got there and they're not pushing you towards the exit door, you tend to stay where you are. But this was a rare example of a player making a move that, you know, on paper at best could be described as a sideways move. Now maybe it didn't seem like a sideways move to him, because, you know, you were kind of hinting at it there. Maybe was he led to believe that he was walking into a very, very different scenario than the one he found. But it certainly wasn't a straightforward case of, yes, clearly it's a better opportunity being manager of Dundalk than it is of being St. Pat's. As I say, there were certainly two clubs at best on a par. Whether it's the heartstrings of, you know, everything he'd done as a player, whether that's what tilted him towards going there, or, you know, was he led to believe that they were in a position financially on and off the pitch and everything to make another burst at getting right back into becoming the team that they once were. But It certainly hasn't ended well. Look, conversations I would have had with Dundalk players when I was at Dundalk, with the likes of your you know, Patrick McElhenney's, I suppose, a guy I would have talked to an awful lot, Chris Shields, a guy I would have talked to an awful lot. Like, time and time again, they just went on about, Stephen O'Donnell, Rory Higgins. You know, two guys who you've spent time with. They were, you know, former teammates of theirs. Then they would have worked under them as coaches, that sort of thing. They both just thought these are two guys who are absolutely cut out for management. Absolutely cut out for management. And yet, you know, there just are no guarantees. It doesn't matter how much you have, how much leadership capabilities you've got as a player. And don't get me wrong, now I'm not writing off Stevie. He's a young man. He's a good bit younger than me, so he is. He has plenty of time to rebuild a reputation and go again. And I have no doubt that he would. That I would be stunned if that's not what he looks to do. But it certainly hasn't been as smooth sailing as, you know, I think the likes of Fats and Shields, he just thought, you know, this will be easy. He was an absolute leader within the dressing room. He's going to be an absolute leader as a manager. This is, you know, plain sailing. He's going to be a nailed on success as a manager. It's never quite that straightforward, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think I'd say he saw this coming, judging by the tone of his voice in his post-match interviews on Friday. He sounded like he was just gone, like he's so disappointed. To the point of being almost morose. It's probably worse for Dundalk, or at least Dundalk fans, that the final act has come against Derry, which do kind of exist as the team that Dundalk still might have had they run themselves responsibly. And I think the struggles of this season, obviously O'Donnell is now carrying the can for it, and it's been worse than anyone, I think, anticipated. Like, you know, I haven't beaten anyone. They've played almost everyone. I think it's just Bowes they haven't played, because that game was postponed. Three goals in all those games. But I also think that the season's struggles are indivisible from the uncertainty off the pitch, which has been there for so long now. Like, obviously the Peak Six thing descended into a circus. The local consortium came in. I think that local consortium may have had to come in ahead of time, or ahead of the, maybe a year earlier than they had ideally planned. And then obviously the sale came came in the off season to Brian Ainscough, and that, you know, that was kind of left a bit late, and then it happened quickly for him. He accelerated the deal to kind of get some certainty around next season, particularly in the realm of player transfers. But, you know, Dundalk were in, whereas like so many clubs had their business done by the end of the last season, like, you know, and Dundalk were in such limbo and uncertainty that they couldn't get there. So they had to shop outside Ireland. They targeted guys who had, you know, kind of roughly around 22, 23, 24 from England and Scotland, who ideally had a bit of first team experience. But naturally, you're bringing a team together so late, it's going to be tough for them to gel. You are lacking league experience. You can see what Shelburne are top of the league because Dundalk is because Damien Duff is partly prized and set and put particular importance on having experience in the League of Ireland. So it's all become a perfect storm, and unfortunately, Stephen O'Donnell is its latest victim.
Just reading through some of the statement here from that the club released, and it kind of does seem to be almost amicable in the sense, like Shane, you even referenced it there, but like obviously standing, this is obviously Stephen O'Donnell standing as a player, and he even said it himself, he's just like, basically, what he says here, kind of, obviously it's a very sad day for myself and Paddy, that's his assistant, Patrick Craig. I love Dundalk FC, and I love the town so much. We always wanted what was best for Dundalk, and we worked tirelessly to try and do that. We have no doubt that the players and staff will get the club out of the position they're in. And then the way I left it with Brian, that's obviously Brian Ainscough, the new owner, was very amicable, and I think the club is in really good hands going forward. And even like Ainscough even kind of says it himself, he just goes, Stephen is and always will be a legendary figure at Dundalk, and is a very, very talented young coach. But football is a results business, and regrettably our disappointing start to the season has led to this conclusion. Like, as you said, Shane, it wasn't Friday's defeat that they kind of, they're making this solely off, but they've obviously taken their time over the weekend. This statement has come out. You would have imagined that they would have already turned their attention to, well, who is that manager? Who is that coach that actually will get those results? And as O'Donnell says, help get the players out of it. Like, who are the names that are springing to mind?
Yeah, there's not a huge amount that kind of naturally spring up. You always look to see who's been put in the interim. has kind of been in the box seat. So I see that they've named Burnsy, Liam Burns, and I think the more interesting name of that is Brian Gartland. You know, again,
because he's head of football operations, that's his title, isn't it?
Yeah, it was interesting to see Gart's name as part of the interim management team. Whether that will be, you know, only literally for a game or so while they get somebody in, or whether they'd actually be given a couple of games. It'd be very interesting to see how they would get on if he was given a couple of games. He is absolutely another natural leader. So he is, and I would think that he would have, I think there would be a bit of a grow there to give it a bit of a go for a few games. Outside of that, I'd be struggling to throw names up at the moment. Look, obviously Vinny's been there before. I think his name will naturally kind of come back into the fray. I would have thought if he hadn't recently taken the Bowes job, I think Alan Reynolds' name would have naturally come into the fray. Rennie was there at Dundalk during my time there. So that they've probably just got in ahead of him on that one.
Declan Devine. I know, isn't he on? He's in a short term.
Yeah,
deal.
He's in a gig with Glentoran at the moment, isn't he? Yeah, you'd imagine he stays there at least until the end of the season. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'm trying to think of, is there any kind of younger up and coming managers that you see? It's not like it's near the end of the season where you can sit tight and wait till the end of the season and then, you know, try and take somebody in from another club at the end of the season. You know, we're really only up and running. I think this is quite often, more often than not, when a job comes up, I think there are obvious candidates. I don't see who the obvious candidates are this time round.
The only one I've mentioned Devine purely on the basis that he has form and has a reputation for being able to have that instant impact and being able to turn around a kind of feeling in a dressing room and maybe have that instant impact that happened at Bowes and then obviously dissipate. But that's basically what they need. They need someone who, I don't think it's a sure thing, and obviously it's going to be difficult because obviously he's gone and he's got a job. But I think that I'm almost certain that's only until the end of the season in Northern Ireland, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
Wednesday. I'm just trying to look at here. I think that's at the end of this month.
Yeah, as far as I know, I'm pretty sure they run winter season as well. So that would be April, May time. Yeah.
So like, if it's the end of this month, and do you kind of stick with it and see if maybe Brian Gartland, I'm just saying, Erling Burns get a couple of results and then bring him in for something till the end of the season? Or I should say, if the interim, it's Pats as well, ironically, it's Pats who come to Oriel Park, isn't it? I think on Friday. It's strange. I just don't see how to get, well, you can see how to get out, because if they make the right kind of appointment, it's surely going to help. But I think Drogheda are strong enough to him. I think Drogheda will keep them at bay.
I'm with you, I have to say. And maybe someone comes in and affects a major change, but bloody hell, if someone with Stephen O'Donnell's record was going in there, you'd be feeling optimistic about things, and he couldn't make it happen, you know. It's hard to know, really, isn't it? I mean, Vinny will probably be linked. I mean, if Tim Clancy didn't take the Cork job, I think he might be a shoo-in for it. But otherwise, you're thinking, is it a bit of a risk to look at someone like Stephen Rice? I don't know, maybe if he's ready or if he wants to go to management, but has a good reputation at the FAI, I'm sure Stephen Kenny would definitely recommend him. Stephen Kenny will be linked, but I'd be absolutely shocked if he went back already. It's a tough question, and I think how difficult a question it is measured by the fact that they've gone for an interim appointment. It's not a case where they made a call on Friday to dismiss O'Donnell and spent the weekend getting the next guy in place.
Well, you mentioned one SK. There is another SK.
The other SK who's currently broadcasting from a dressing room live in the Centre of Excellence in Leisure.
which nobody can see because the Wi-Fi is so bad.
Good.
What's Filippo up to?
Filippo's got a tasty gig, I think, somewhere, the last time I looked. Is he operating in like the second tier in Switzerland or something like that?
Really?
I think so, yeah. No, I'd say that.
Bring him home. I think he still has a seat reserved or a table reserved in the Kingfisher Chipper down the town, does he?
Oh, he'd be a higher class of an eater than that.
I well imagine. And look, just going through, just to finish on, just for, as a bit of a recap, but we mentioned Alan Reynolds. Not a great start for him at home in front of his own fans. Obviously, he got a couple of away games, but Waterford, obviously, managed by Keith Lyon, their former Bowes manager, they had a 1-0 win. Well, he was at Pats and Rovers, not for working, but just taking in the game. Did not see that result coming at half time. I have to be honest, Pats coming back from 1-0 down to win 2-1. Drotted in Shells, drawn 2-1, which we'll go back onto now in a second. Obviously, Sligo and Galway was postponed, just partly because of obviously Storm Catalina over the weekend. But like the table, we don't need to be going into where it's at. Obviously, like Rovers, again, as I mentioned, they could have been 2 or 3 up before half time with the dominance they had in the game and a couple of good chances that they had. And then Pat's fair play to them, absolutely ruthlessly punished them, and then were pretty kind of resilient to hold on. So kind of a performance that had a little bit of everything to please Pat's fans. But obviously then Shells dropping points, but obviously the big talking point comes out of it is the fact that the linesman is hit by an object. And I know you both kind of chatted about it on off the ball, and it's a conversation in terms of, say, the whole fan culture side of things and Pyro, and it's clear why League of Ireland has attracted maybe fans over the last little while, just because you only have to see it. The younger fans, first of all, it's affordable. You mentioned that point, like sometimes people kind of forget it's actually very expensive to go even for one-off games or even a couple of times a year to over to England now. But the fan culture, there is that gap. But I wrote about this after what happened with Keane Bourne at Bowes, and even you speak to players, and yeah, it adds the Pyro adds to it, but it's not what makes it. It's not why they come back. It's like you can't. I think it's a bit. People, like, I understand fans will say, oh, you know, it's an attack on their fan culture, but it's not an attack on it when the culture is attacking people who you want to see involved in football. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm saying that as a supporter, I'm saying that as someone who will go and enjoy going to football, but maybe it's different for younger fans and they see that the Pyro is necessary, but it is, without going all Maud Flanders on it, it is illegal and all the rest of it. Do you know what I mean? So like there is you've already touched on it, but there is that delicate balance you have to get right.
I think so, yeah. And like to my mind it does add to the atmosphere. Like the FAI Cup final is becoming one of the great annual occasions in Irish sport, because the atmosphere is unlike anything else in Irish sport, and the pyro and that kind of acrid smell before a kickoff is part of it in my view. But if people can't use it responsibly, then nobody should be allowed to use it at all, to be quite honest. Like, I mean, health and safety dangers, like if there's a threat there, that has to be everyone's prime motivator here. I think there's Stephen Bradley quotes out there today about the players don't want pyro. And what's been interesting about it is that it's not, when I was thinking the fans want it, especially after that chat me and Shane had yesterday, I've had correspondence from people, fans who don't want it. And we did reference it on the show that Rovers put out a statement a few weeks ago saying how a young fan almost suffered fairly serious burns because of someone using pyro nearby. So there's actually a lot of people in the stands who obviously don't really have a public forum in which to say it, but don't want it either. Obviously then, again, some do. And in my view, it does add to the atmosphere and the uniqueness of what we're selling here. I don't know whether you can work with fan groups or ultras groups and find some responsible way of using it. Maybe you can't, I don't know. But certainly if a player is going to be struck by it and a linesman is going to be struck by it, I wouldn't blame anyone involved with clubs or the FAI to say this is banned and we can't have another flare lit between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, and look, it's also going to be interesting to see what's going to be the repercussions of this. I don't know, this thing of banning a team banning supporters from attending the next away game, like that really doesn't make much sense to me has been the best way to deal with something like this. And again, like, don't get me wrong, you do have to remember this is one fool, but it's nearly always just one fool. And I suppose what the FAI want to try and do is send a message that if you are that one fool, how can we create a culture whereby the rest of the club and the rest of support base just absolutely hate you for what you've done, and then maybe people might think twice about being so stupid about it. But it is, look, it's again, you know, it's an easy line to say, but pyros are not the problem. It's the person holding the pyro who's the problem. You know, if you could be guaranteed that the pyros could be used in a reasonable and kind of adult manner, then it'd be brilliant. It'd be brilliant just to add to the atmosphere, because they do. There's no point saying they don't. Of course they do. Why else would the FAI be putting them in their videos? And
well, they've stopped doing that over the last couple of years, and even little things where, again, when I was writing about this a few weeks ago now, but even little things like, say, clubs putting stuff on social media, and if clubs use pyro in any of their videos, even like little things where the one club put a very harmless video of their team walking out, but there's pyro visible in the background, and the FAI are all over it, and they're not finding them straight away. Like, there is apparently protocols for it and stuff and all the rest of it. And say one aspect of it, and again, self-policing would be part of it, but obviously if there's one agent there, it's going to be difficult to stop it, which makes you think, well, it's actually, if the culture is to bring it in, the culture would be, well, some person will feel it's okay, or they will have to try, they'll have to try it. That's just the nature of where it's at. The one thing I don't quite agree with, and even though it's the strongest deterrent, is may stopping fans from actually attending games. Partly, and the reason why this would be, is it's not like, say, in England or even in any other European country where, well, fans or clubs would then, say, maybe be able to take the hit for a certain game. But the primary kind of income does come from fee through the turnstiles. It's not as if like clubs can rely on a TV deal or big money from the association. So like when you're hitting them with maybe clubs coming through the gate, and for instance, I would imagine going off what's happened already previously with Cork, this happened on last year where they had sections of their home ground closed when Mark Doyle was hit by stuff. And wasn't it Drogheda away at Dundalk, and then obviously Bowles fans at Pats, they had their away game. Was it Drogheda away as well? Actually, it looks as if you would imagine, like, obviously Shells are at home to Bowles this Friday. Will the FAI do something for Shells at home, like, and punish them at home?
Yeah, well, that would make a lot.
Or will they
more
punish
sense.
The next away game, which is Galway?
Why an away game? I don't understand. Explain the concept of an away
game.
Because
I'm guessing that, and I'm presuming I can double check on this, but I'm guessing it was an away fan allocation, so punish the away fans. But then obviously you're then gonna also punish.
You're hitting an innocent club in the pocket.
Exactly, that, and this is where I'm coming into it as well, with the fact that obviously clubs are so reliant on income from people coming through the gates, that's where it's like, maybe there has to be another way of doing it.
I know, but, and I'm not saying, like, if I was the League of Ireland director and I was making this call ahead of Friday, I think Shells Bowes is the TV game on Friday, if I'm right.
Yeah, it is, yeah, it's on the TV.
Like, there is part of me, and look, I'm not saying the FAI would be like this, but just to empathise with them a bit, like, if I was in that position, I'd find it hard to make that call on Friday, because you're like, yeah, like, maybe hit Shells where it hurts, and maybe that's the right punishment, but at the same time, every occasion that you get national media attention has to be treated as a flagship event for the league to push the investment that is so desperately needed. Like, I mean, I think this really should be the FAI's MO, like, everything that they should do at the moment, it should be geared toward getting investment in for League of Ireland facilities and League of Ireland academies. And like, it's hard then to, you take the crowd away, you're taking the atmosphere away from the game on Friday. Like, I don't know. I'm not saying that that's what they're going to do, that they'll equivocate over it to that extent, but I'd be shocked if it wasn't in the back of their minds, and I wouldn't be criticising them for thinking that way, because if I was in that position, I'd think the exact same way. My last point on this is, I thought that Duff and Shells as a club generally spoke well in the immediate aftermath of it. There was no equivocation. There was an acknowledgement that it was one person, but like, that, there was no excusing that fact, you know? And then Duff did make a good point that, you know, he also did affect the game. You know, we had a lot more momentum before the 15 minutes toward the end, which is in one way naturally that he would look at that way, but no harm in reminding the fan that, you know, your striking alliance might be also undermining your own club in more ways than one.
Yeah, and let's be honest, I just don't see how this isn't going to be something we'll be talking about again at some point. Like, again, there was stuff thrown at the match on Friday, there was pyro thrown onto the pitch, there was objects thrown onto the pitch in that game as well, and other than maybe players being a couple of yards away or one other side, something else could have happened. It's probably going to be something. But then, and again, I'm going on this. I know obviously clubs have to come down hard. I'm actually going to stop talking about this now because I think we've covered it. we've covered it, and we'll probably just go around in circles. And it is going to be something else that we will discuss. And yeah, we might even have a discussion at some point in the next week, Gav, about the new Republic of Ireland senior men's manager.
Early April. How many more days can we get out of this?
As well, Friday.
Early April is. Friday is the... Ireland's had the date. Friday the... 12th. Do you think there'll be a manager to be unveiled on Friday? I mean, I don't know what you think. I feel like maybe it's no indication, but all quiet on the Western Front.
Yeah. Well, isn't that... Well, wasn't the reason, and part of what had been laid out, was they didn't want to take away from the women's international games and the kind of focus being on that.
Announcement in the morning then? Wednesday morning?
I don't know.
By Friday, sorry, when's, I mean, early April, when's early April end? I mean, to be honest, I mean, if you're, I mean, anything after the Masters is not early April. Can I come on?
With the Masters, yeah. Well, I was told last week I was given, it was very soon. Although it was told it would be communicated very soon. Not communicated to be a new manager, that something would be communicated very soon. So, anyway.
We should get a check-in. I've dropped the ball. I've not been doing a whole lot of work on this, really, given I've kind of been plugged into the women's team and so forth. I mean, what's your view on Poyet? Like, is that still... movement on that?
Well, no, when was it? We're in early April now. So,
yep.
In earlier April, which was last week, it was a bit of a mad one where it went from last weekend. I remember a report how it was like... he had torn it down on the basis that he wasn't able to bring in a staff that he wanted. Then it was made clear to me that he still wanted a job, hope a compromise could be reached, and that they would be open for the FAI coming back in for talks. And then it was made clear that, well, actually, he's now going to wait until the summer, see what options are available after the Euros, but also possibly in club football. And that the reason that he wasn't able to bring in his preferred staff was because they weren't going to be affordable within the FAI's strict budgets, which was respected, apparently, which is fair enough. But so that kind of tees it up, whereby the FAI are possibly still hamstrung slightly in terms of the overall package. Maybe they're happy with what they can offer the manager, but if the manager isn't happy with what his preferred staff are going to be coming on, that's another issue. And that's something else for us to be chatting about, and I'm sure it's something that we'll hopefully have a bit more clarity on. But this is a week with plenty of jeopardy. enjoy the golf at the weekend, Gav.
Do me best. Thanks very much.
Please wear your green hoodie, regardless, on next Monday. Take care, Shane.
Good luck.
Let us know if you're going to be in the mix for the job, by the way. Dundalk job.
I'm secretly taking the Irish one. It's ruining me out of the Dundalk one.
Okay, no worries. Go on, take care. Slam.
Good luck. Cheers.